Hello, you all. You are tuning in to the Audible Weed Walk, episode number 58. This is Nina welcoming you. No, you did not miss last week's podcast. Last week, we had to skip. My furry friend of 13 years was not doing very well. She's feeling better now. And that too, due to a bit of local and some fresh weedy supplements in food. That may have helped her. This week, I'm going to talk about diversity, biodiversity. If you have attended my class on biodiversity and land stewardship, these basic concepts of ecology, you already are aware of. What are these three types of diversity commonly spoken about? They are genetic diversity, species diversity, and ecosystem diversity. But what are they? Genetic diversity means the variations in the amount of genetic information within and among individuals of a population. This, you see, is an excellent demonstration when you become a weeder and start noticing the various forms and expression of the same exact plant. You notice that the same plant when growing, where it gets a little spray of water occasionally, or in other desirable, resources, they look so different from the same plant, same variety, like same species, if it grows in a harsh situation. But a healthy wild population means it can adapt very well within its natural range and completes its full life cycle. Like, for a plant, it would be from flowering, seeding, flowering, fruiting, seeding, and then the next generation comes. Then comes to species diversity. This is referred to relative abundance of species in a given area, region, or ecosystem. If you look around as a weeder, you notice that how many wild varieties of just eggplants or eggplant family you find around. Eggplant, by the way, we call it brinjal, right? So let me name a few. Solanum nigrum, Solanum americanum, both of which are referred to as black nightshade, and we locally call it mantakali. Then there is Solanum torvum or turkey berry. Even though this plant comes from South America, it has been long naturalized in our system, food system. And it grows pretty much wild everywhere. Then there is Solanum trilobatum or Thuduvalai, whose leaves are added to soup or batter fried and eaten. And there are so many that are not edible but medicinal. Add to them the ones that are from the same Solanaceae family but not Solanum per se, like Withania somnifera or Ashwagandha. This is used widely in all major medication, natural medicinal forms in India. Then there is Physalis. Yes, the ones we get, we have the wild variety and also cultivated varieties of ground cherries. We don't have so much tomatillos in India though, but that too is from the same family. So to recap, species diversity refers to the relative abundance of species or species richness. Then comes ecosystem diversity. The diversity of ecosystem in an area and also includes the study of the collective influence of that ecosystem, especially on the overall biodiversity and the human beings who dwell there. A paper I read some time back suggested that all across the tropical world, wild, weedy, uncultivated sources still remain a major food source. When quantified, it came to about food for 90 to 180 days in a year. Imagine that. That would be 3 to 6 months only depending on the wild, uncultivated food. And this is not wild, uncultivated greens only. It's also fungi, the mushrooms, and also game, flesh. Now, in the recent years and months, we are feeling the effects of the climate change, disruption of climatic, of cropping patterns and extreme weather events, an outbreak of disease in certain areas, or in the recent pandemic, there's a greater need to be conscious of our food choices and food sources. A paper by Janet McFaul and her colleagues had I had read some time back suggested that increased resilience to stress is possible via increased biodiversity in different natural system, including agricultural system. Diversity in food production is possible following the following three levels. Genetic diversity, by carefully selecting the wild indigenous varieties and cultivars for production. Species diversity, possible by focusing on wide range of crops on each farm, which are very much in sync with the idea of permaculture, homestead, garden or food forest. And finally, broad ecosystem diversity by allowing and encouraging local, indigenous and wild food system to thrive in various ecosystems over the landscape and thus encouraging and maintaining high biodiversity overall. Even when talking about a food network, which is like sourcing food for the public and not just for ourselves and our families, these strategies make sense. One, a network of locally based food producers and entrepreneurs provide opportunity to access greater diversity at each stage, which in turn increases the capacity to adapt promptly when needed in response to disturbance. For example, if a farm loses its vegetable crop some one season, until the next time the crop can come up, usually in a biodiverse form, there's plenty of wild, uncultivated greens and tubers that grow naturally to see through both consumption and sales in that period. But you see, letting this wild plant growing in your farm is not enough. We need to learn about them and know how to use them and spread that knowledge to others. When crop loss occurs, other crops can still contribute to the overall harvest, reducing net loss. Diverse crops can support decentralization of food processing, where local, low-tech techniques can also survive. Finally, even the public food distribution system can benefit and be more secure via such diversified and localized nutritious local food supplies. For a farmer, therefore, building resilience requires a diversifying what is produced, allowing wild uncultivated ones to flourish, knowing and harvesting these wild plants, but also ensuring that the community knows how to use them. Similarly, as an individual, it is important that we source our vegetables and food from local and organic sources. Remain aware of the wild and uncultivated greens around us so that, at least occasionally, we can forage, which is also much more relaxing activity than doing grocery in a supermarket. And knowing ways to how to pre-process this wild greens and eat a variety of local produce and wild foraged, greens or mushrooms or whatever, what have you. Now, tying up with the last podcast, what do these wild varieties of green and grains bring? In one example, it seems to fortify rice, the rice has to first get polished, which means it's taking off the outer coating. A big no-no for if you want to eat a rice healthy, you should never, get into polished rice. But in order to fortify rice, it has to be polished. And then micronutrients like iron, for example, can be injected in this rice. So great, we have rice with iron in. The best fortified rice is only 8.9 milligram of iron per kg it can hold. But according to Dr. Debal Deb, an eminent scientist, there is at least 550 traditional varieties of rice alone in our country that has been documented, and out of which 86 varieties are actually rich in iron as a micronutrient. So this is naturally, you know, remember the highest amount possible in a genetically modified rice, it was only 8.9 milligram per kg. An indigenous rice variety, this one out of 86, called Bai Dhusuri, that grows in West Bengal, Odisha, Jharkhand area, contains 150.8 mg of milligram of per kg of iron. And this is entirely naturally, natural indigenous variety, doesn't require a huge amount of investment and marketing to get this, crop, encouraging this crop to grow. There are wild uncultivated greens and fruits that can be a good source also. For example, fig or ati. This is not the, not that which produces the sweet fig fruits, but the cluster figs that are eaten cooked as vegetables. And there are others. Similarly, vitamin A is another micronutrient that are often lacking in an unbalanced diet. And it can be easily sourced from taro or seppan karange, which is Colocasia esculenta, sweet potatoes, pumpkins, Dioscorea esculenta, which is locally called Vatalavalli karange. It also produces air potatoes that can be treated, you know, separately treated as another tuber source. And of course, there is a relative of that, which is purple yam, Dioscorea alata, Kurkan, which is a local tuber from the mint family. Experts are calling food fortification as commodification of malnutrition. I like that phrase, you know, it kind of encapsulates the whole thing. But as an ecologist and intuitively as a foodie, I know, and I am sure you know too, that by moving away from increasingly processed food, we will actually embrace the life force in natural food. The life force that runs the world, keeps the earth and our body healthy and resilient. That's what I think. Let me know what's your thought on this. Write to me at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com. Edibleweedwalk is all one word, small letters, @gmail.com. With that thought, I will end today. See you next time. Stay well and stay safe.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.